We're in a series now that started last week on Easter weekend called Challenging Questions for the Church. We like to take these things head on rather than pretend that they're not out there, because there's good answers. There's really, really good answers for these questions. And it's not, you know, cookie cutter, clean, tie up all the rough edges answers, but honest, I hope. Truly honest, Bible-based answers and faithful answers that I hope will encourage you, will increase your knowledge and your understanding of Scripture and God, and also make you more effective as the salt of the earth and the light of the world. That's what Jesus says you are. It's what he says his followers are, that you're the salt of the earth. You're the flavor. You're the light of the world, to bring that light to the world around you. Christianity, as I'm fond of saying, if we just reduce it to some personal, private thing that's just between you and God, you're missing the breadth of Christianity. You're missing what it really is. I mean, that's a piece of it. And I suppose on all sorts of levels, that's where it starts. Your personal relationship that you can have with Jesus Christ. But it doesn't end there, folks. That's just the beginning point. That's just where it starts. It's we receive God's grace and his truth. We receive this light. And then we're called to bring that light to the world. We're called to receive this love and for our cup to overflow, for that love to overflow out into the world around us. So Jesus says, you're the light of the world. Don't hide it. Let it shine. Let that light shine to the world around you, so God will get the glory in heaven, so that the world will be changed. That, in a nutshell, is when religion gets good, is when religious people are doing that. When we are bringing the light of God's love to the world around us. That's when religion is a positive force, a positive influence in the world, because it sure can be negative. There's no doubt about that. For us to pretend that religion, just because it's religion, is good, even Christianity is a religion, that all of it is good, simply because we're a part of that Christian thing, that institution. And that's part of the problem. Let me put a visual up here that if you can see, great, and if you can't, hopefully it'll get up on the screens and you can catch it up there. I just want you to kind of see this, if you will, and some of you are visual learners. So let's use this. Let's say this is belief on the vertical line, that if you are an all-in believer in God, you're at the top. You're 100% full of belief. And you know that there's a God, and you believe in God, and that's all there is. On the bottom of this spectrum, I suppose, would be atheism. You know there isn't a God. That's what you believe. And so you say that there isn't, and the people up here say there definitely is. And then somewhere along the way is this continuum. You say, I'm pretty sure there's a God, so I'm up here. I'm not totally sure. And people down here, I'm pretty sure there isn't, but there might be. So maybe they're up here a little bit on the line. So that's this line here. And then this line here is the religion line. And we want to look at what happens with these quadrants. So over here is I'm fully religious. Religion is my thing. I'm all in with religion. And people over here say, I'm not religious at all. It's becoming kind of trendy these days for people to say, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. And I get it. I understand that. I think what they're saying, and the part of that I totally agree with, is the spirit part, the Holy Spirit, is the part that connects me to God. And that's a good thing. And the religion part is the negative thing. All religion is negative. All religion is bad, is what they're saying. And I understand the part where they're saying the negative influence of religion. They're saying, I don't want any part of that. I don't want to associate with that. In other words, I don't want to associate with religion that's arrogant. I don't want to associate with religion that's self-righteous. I don't want to associate with religion that leads to violence or wars or abuse. I don't want to associate with religion that's all about the institution, that's all about control and power and all these things. So that would be religion. And there's kind of a fancy pants word for it called religiosity that's sort of making rounds in academic circles these days, at least in theological circles. Religiosity is really all about power and control and ritual and tradition and holding on to that. There were people like this in Jesus' day too. They were the religious leaders, Pharisees, Sadducees, Sanhedrin, those kinds of folks. They were more into religion than they were into God. So if belief in God is up here, just because you have that belief doesn't mean that it's a part of your religion. They were more into their control, their power, their traditions, to the point where Jesus had to say at one point, you know, you can make void the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You can be so holding on so hard to your religious tradition that you lose God. If church life, just check your heart on this. I don't think this will be a problem for most of you. If church life, if it's not church, if it isn't Christianity, unless there's a certain kind of worship, unless there's a certain style of music, unless there's a certain sort of song or instrument played, then it isn't really Christianity. You're lost in religiosity. Your tradition has become bigger than God. Your rituals, what you're comfortable with, you're in a quadrant that isn't quite where we want to be, which is up here. Over here, the people who say, I'm spiritual but not religious, there's a word for that too. It's spiritualism. It's not good. Because they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. They're throwing out the positive influence of religion and saying all religion is bad and all belief is good. And so if you're not careful, you end up with a theology that says, this is the deep historical theological word for it, whatever. Whatever is God. Jesus is God, Buddha is God, Muhammad's God, that tree is God, I'm God, you're God, we're all God, whatever. It doesn't matter. If I want it to be, that's spiritual. But there isn't religious accountability around you, so you can wander off and make believe anything you want about spirituality. It's very comfortable. It's very appealing. It doesn't have to be challenging at all if you don't want it to be. It just is whatever you want it to be. And there's a name for that too. It's called original sin. We create God in our own image. We invent a God that we want to be comfortable with instead of receiving the God who speaks to us through his word. Down here, on this quadrant, I would call them the ARAs. Anti-religious atheists. You say, aren't all atheists anti-religious? No. Not all atheists. Atheists don't believe in God. But they're not all against religion. They see, some of them, the open-minded ones, see the benefit of good religion. They see the destruction of bad religion. And they want to talk about that too. But they'll also say, yeah, but there's some good. Religion does some good. It's fascinating. There's a study that's coming out of Duke in the last few years. And other research universities have come out with similar studies that show that religious people who go to church at least once a week or more, live on average 7 years longer than those who don't. Isn't that great? Because that means the people who showed up for Easter but didn't come back next week are going to die 7 years before you. Because you made the effort. You're not just a creaster, Christmas and Easter. You're not just a woomer and tumor. You're here every week. You know, everybody comes for Easter, but you're here the Sunday after Easter, which traditionally is one of the least attended services in the history of church forever and ever. Amen. But you're here, and because you are, you're going to live 7 years longer. I didn't invent the research. I'm just telling you what it says. On average, 7 years longer. You're looking at me like, how's your health, pal? Well, yeah, I'm working on it. I could be dead already if I didn't have this. So there's, and the same research looks deeper at things. It says actually blood pressure goes down the more religious you are. Winning. It's good for your body. It's good for your mind. It's good for your soul. Religion has some positive influence. To deny that, really, you just got to put your head in the sand. You just have to pretend, you know, stick your fingers in your ears and sing the national anthem. Say, I'm not going to deal with truth. I'm not going to deal with the reality that religion actually can be and is, the research shows, that has really nothing to do. They have no slant. They had no motivation to show that religion was a positive force. This is Duke University. They said it is. It just statistically is and can be a very positive influence on body, mind, and soul. Go figure. So anti-religious atheists, though, and there are atheists who are religious. Have you heard about this? There's an atheist church that's starting in Europe. Did you hear what I just said? There's an atheist church starting in Europe. Because they love the religious part of it. They just don't believe in God. So can you imagine their hymns? What a friend we have in, we don't know, in no one. But God bless them. I'm not mad at them. I love them. Do you? What do you have in your heart for atheists? What do you have in your heart for people who don't believe what you believe? Do you want God to get them? You want to show them? What about the ones who pick fights with you? What about the ones who pick fights online and malign your Christianity. Talk trash about it. Put it on bumper stickers and say your religion is toxic and it's terrible and it's mythology and it's all these horrible things. What do you do with that? Do you love them? How do you feel about the Westboro Baptist Church? You know, the people who represent religiosity gone wild, way over to the extreme. I mean, it's fundamentalism. It's fundamentalism on steroids. So you show up and you try to represent God by holding signs telling the world God hates and God's against and you're going to burn in hell and all these kinds of things. And to do it with a flavor, with a hatred that just emanates out of them, you say, do you really know what that's like? Those of you who've been around Hope for a while, you remember this. It was, I don't know how many years ago, they decided to picket this church. They came with their colorful signs, and they picketed. They were walking up and down the sidewalk on a Sunday morning as a bunch of you were pulling in. We knew they were coming, so we gave you instructions. Do not get into fights with them, because that's what they want. That's how they get their lawsuits. That's how they make their money. That's how they fund the ministry. Don't pick fights with them. A group of us in the church decided, well, we don't want to waste the opportunity. So we decided, we asked ourselves, what would Jesus do? Think he'd love them. We don't want to say these people are lost forever. We don't want to say there's no hope for them. Isn't this our mission as a church, to reach out to the world around us and share the everlasting love of Jesus Christ? Or is it just to reach out to the people we like? Just reach out to the people who agree with us. Reach out to the people who dress like us, vote like us, hang out in the places we like to hang out, cheer for the same teams we do, live in the same neighborhoods we do, have all those kinds of things. That's not what the Great Commission is all about. It's go and make disciples of all nations. Reach out to the whole world. Even the people that you want to dislike. Even the people who dislike you. Even the people who pick fights with you. Do you love them? Jesus says anybody can love their friends and hate their enemies. I mean, it's pretty natural to do that. But my followers, here comes the radical nature of God's love. My followers will love their enemies. Romans 12 says, don't just say you love them, really love them. Don't just lip service the thing, actually love them. So we served the Westboro Baptist Church picketers breakfast. We brought it up to them, one of our yummy breakfasts. And we brought it up to them, and they yelled at us and made fun of us and called us names. And we just smiled and didn't say a word and gave them breakfast. Love. That's when religion gets good. So here's what I want to suggest to you. This is where God resides. This is where Jesus hangs out. And if we're here, or here, or here, God's calling us here. He's calling us to his light, to a place where love wins the day. You say, oh yeah, you know, all we need is love, yeah, da-da-da-da. Love, 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 that's all we ever really hear about around here. That's not true, that's not all you ever hear about. But we lead with it. Yeah, you lead with it because it's so easy to talk about love. I mean, who's against love? Everybody's for love, right? And so it's a very popular message. Love. That must be why you do it, because it attracts the crowds. Just tell people about love. No, that's not why we do it. We do it because Jesus leads with love. What does Jesus say? It's take all the commandments and I'll sum them up for you with a word. What's the word? Love. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And if you think it's just because it's popular or it's an easy message, it's not. It's quite challenging. Loving your enemies is very challenging. Loving your friends is very easy. Loving enemies the way God tells us to do and the way I'm going to try to communicate to you in this sermon is a very challenging message, and it's kind of offensive. Because the world says, you don't have to love everybody. And there's a part of our sinful nature in every single one of us that says, yeah, I don't. I don't have to love. I can hate. I can hate people. I can go after them. I can fight them. I can do all these things. That's what I can. I don't have to turn cheeks. I don't have to love my enemies. I can ignore the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus leads with love. He leads with love. The Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, of all the gifts that you could share with the world, the greatest are faith, hope, and love. And of these three, the greatest is love. Colossians 3, above all else, clothe yourselves with love. Put on love. Above everything else that you could do, it's love. Romans 12, don't just say you love people, really love them. 1 Timothy 4, God is love. God is love. Everyone, let's say that together, please. God is love. Say it one more time. If you don't hear anything else, you don't remember anything else I said today, that would be worth coming for. So I already knew that. Well, good. It's a refresher then. But it's not just about knowing it. It's about living it out. Because then 1 John 4 digs deep. Did you hear it as it was being read by Mac earlier in the service? Beloved, let us love one another, for God is love, and everyone that loves knows God. And those who don't love don't know God. What? What if I say I believe? What if I say I'm all in with God? What if I pretend? What if I'm just super religious, but I don't really believe that love part? You don't really know God then. God is here. God is here. He's not at the end of the line of religion, not just the end alone, and not just the end of the line of belief alone. He's here. Religion can be a very positive force. People who say, I'm just spiritual and not religious, they forget Jesus was religious. He started this whole religion called Christianity. He's very much for religion. So people who say, I'm just with Jesus, I'm not with religion, I think you'd be like, what? The whole point is, if you're going to follow me, you're going to be a part of a religion. You're going to be a part of Christianity. The positive part of it, I hope, not what it can become, but the part that's used for good, the part that brings the radical nature of my love to the world around us, that brings my light, that transforms lives. And so things happen like they happened last week at Easter. 78 people come forward to be baptized after the service. And that's after a Wednesday night at Power Life, where dozens more were baptized. After a Sunday the before, where more were baptized then too. Why does that happen? Because God shows up in religious places with his love. And if we just say, oh, you know, I don't need Jesus, I don't need church, I don't need religion, I just got my thing. Well, isn't that convenient for you? What about the rest of the world? That's where organized religion can become a very positive force. That's where God's love can be activated in ways. There's no way you could do it alone. Can you build 233 churches in Ghana by yourself? You did together as a church family. There's a freshman at Colorado State University. Over the last 6 weeks, there's a freshman at Colorado State University. He wrote us a letter this week after Easter. He said, I just want to tell you guys some things. I'm so excited. He's probably listening right now. He's a baseball player at Colorado State. I love this story because he's hanging out here, which is where God calls us all to hang out. Listen to this story. I love my teammates, and I love Jesus, and I want to connect the dots. That's to paraphrase what he wrote. All of my baseball teammates, they didn't all know Jesus. And because Jesus has blessed me so much, I wanted them to know. Because I love them. Couldn't keep it to myself. Because I love them, I wanted to find a way to do it. So he organized a religion. He organized a Bible study, which is a religious activity. He organized, it's not just spiritual, it's religious too. It's both. It's the positive of both. And he put them together, and so the spiritual part of it was safe because it was Bible-based, and the religion part of it was positive because Christ was at the center of it. And so he presented the love of Christ to these friends of his on the baseball team through these Bible studies, and they came to faith. They moved from wherever they were up here. And when they did, when it happened, he says, in the letter, he said, I got so excited I had to walk out of the room. I walked out of the room and I just went, yes! I mean, it was a letter. Who knows how he did it? But that's what I'm picturing, okay? I walked out of the room, I just screamed. I was so excited. I couldn't contain myself. And then I went back in. And then he had a check in the letter. He said, use this to, I heard about what you're doing in Ghana over the season of Lent. I'm so excited about it. Here's enough money for a church. A whole church by himself. A college freshman? He says, whatever. I was just going to use it for sunflower seeds. He's a baseball player. The radical nature of God's love. Barbara Fritz died this last week, right after Easter. Her funeral was Friday. I saw her in the hospice just a few days before she died. She is a saint. She was the first leader here at Hope on our missions committee of volunteers that we started when our church had like 20 people. And Barbara was one of them. And the reason I asked her to be a leader on this team was because she understood that for faith to be faith, it had to be activated in love. It just drove her to a place of deep passion when she would see Christians just going through the motions of Christianity. So she was this great, gentle, loving saint of an elderly lady who challenged us all, especially early on, to set this church up to be a mission-focused church. Whether you know her or not, she influenced this church in a very powerful way. Because she didn't just love Jesus so she could get into heaven, although she is now. She loved the people Jesus loved. And she felt like organized religion at its best, that's what we'd do. That we'd be all about that. And we try to be. Because of people like her. Because of her heart. When I saw her in the hospice before she died, after I visited with her, and a nurse came in. She says, I want to talk to you. She says, you're a pastor at Hope, right? I said, yes. So I want to tell you something about your church. And I thought, here we go. She says, when I first moved to town, I said, there's this big church, and they're my experience with big churches in other cities, they're not going to show up. When somebody from their church is here in the hospice, it's just going to be us. Because they're too into their stuff and their programs and their bigness and their budgets and everything else that they're not going to actually care. They're not going to actually show up for just one dear saint who's dying. She said, but I have to apologize because you really surprised me. What we've discovered is that anytime somebody comes to this hospice who is a part of Lutheran Church of Hope, they're going to get visited all the time. Sometimes too much. Which we would rather err on that side. If we know you're in the hospital, if we know you're at the hospice, we will come. We will show up. Somebody from Hope, from our care team, will be there. Somebody will show up to bring the love of Jesus to you, to minister to you, to listen, as Matt Baird said at the end of his song. We'll be there to listen to you, to bring the love of Christ to you, to be spiritual and religious, to be believers and to be the church. She said, wait, there's more, this nurse. She said, not only does your team show up to visit the people at Hope, but if they have time, they will go door to door throughout the whole hospice and see if anybody else needs anything else. That's the kind of love that pours out of you, this church. The care ministers, and some of them are volunteers, and some of them are pastors and staff here, that's an extension of you. That's the kind of church we want to be. A church that's after God's own heart. A church that doesn't just say we love people, but we actually really do. And some of the things you see publicly, and some of the things you'll never know about. I mean, last week you saw Easter, right? You saw all the stuff that was going on. What you didn't see behind the scenes was just this beautiful little story. But I think it's so telling about the heart of our music ministers in this church. Perry Ross, who just led worship this morning again, is the worship director here. He gathered his team together and he gave them a gentle teaching before every service. He basically said, okay, remember what we're doing here. It's not a performance. It's not a show. We're not doing music for people. We're worshiping. We're worshiping. And then he showed him a video where his friend Paul Balazs, who's this famous worship leader out there, had filmed himself a little video that he sent to our worship team for Easter saying these things. Remember what it's all about. Remember your heart. Remember we're here to worship the Lord. And he said, my prayer for you as you lead Easter worship is that you will immerse yourself in every word you sing. That you will just soak in the power of those Bible-based lyrics of these songs that we sing. The simple songs, but biblical songs. That you will bathe in the power and the love of these lyrics, of these scripture verses, and that you will be blessed in that way. And so you will be worshiping, and so you'll be leading worship. And people will be drawn into that light. That's the motivation. We don't have people coming out here. I know Matt Baird's heart is the same way. He doesn't come out here to give you a performance. We don't come out here to say, wow, watch me do this. We come out here to say, let us, if we're at religion at its best, we're going to point you to God. We're not going to point you to us. We're not going to point you to our religion, to our power, to our control, to who we are, to all these. We're going to point you to Jesus Christ because this is where transformation happens. This is where the world changes. You say, that's a little overrated, overstated. But it's not. History shows this. You say, oh, well, but let's go back to the wars. Let's go back to all that. Let's go back to religious people who make science the enemy. Bad religion. Science isn't the enemy. Science is awesome. What about religion that starts all these wars and leads to terrorism and violence and all that? It can happen. But the people who do the terroristic acts, at least in recent American history, are typically not the most devoted religious people. If you actually look deeper into their story, they have a hate-based ideology that's all about control and power. It's all about them. They aren't trying to point people to God and His love. They're trying to take over the world. And that's not good religion. What about the big wars? World War I. Religionless nationalism caused that war. World War II. Anti-religious fascism. Vietnam, Korea. Atheistic communism. How exactly was religion the cause of those wars again? But it does. It causes all these wars. It does all these terrible things. There's a huge 3-volume encyclopedia of war set that if you're a history nerd, you already know about. That was written by these scholars who, why anybody want to take this much time to do it, I don't know, but they thought it was fascinating. They studied every war known to human history, throughout human history. And they discovered that there's a grand total. Here, I'll make a little pie chart down here. 6.98% of wars in human history are caused by religion. 6.98%. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's bad religion that almost always causes those wars. Almost always. And the logic that says, God bless John Lennon, I love his music, I really do, and he's a poet on all sorts of levels, but the logic that says, imagine no religion. It's easy if you try. Imagine no religion. Then imagine people living life in peace. Yoo-hoo. You know the awesome, beautiful song, right? It's the lyrics I take a little... I just want you to pause on a little bit. Really? If there was no religion, there'd be no wars? Statistically, that's not true. The overwhelming majority of wars still would have been fought in history. And that logic is the same kind of logic that would say, if there was no romance, there'd be no murder. Come again, preacher boy. Stay with me for a sec. I looked this up. FBI research. 36.5% of murders in this country are committed by a significant other. A husband, a wife, a boyfriend, a girlfriend. 36. So, the best chance you have, one of the best chances you have of getting murdered is the person sitting next to you right now. If you're with your significant other right now. Some of you are like, I almost did it this morning. It's funny you should bring that up. I certainly thought about it last week. 36.5% of the time, romance leads to murder. A higher percentage than religion leading to war. So, using the same logic of the John Lennon Imagine song, imagine there's no romantic relationships. There'd never be murder again. It's the same logic, only more so. If we could just ban all romance, if we could ban all dating, all courtship, all marriage, if we could just ban those things, there wouldn't be murder anymore. It's ridiculous. It's illogical. Yeah. Dating and marriage and courtship can go really wrong when evil and darkness gets in and time passes and people get wacky and next thing you know, somebody's murdered. But it's very rare. It's the same thing with religion. We don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just because some religion is bad doesn't mean we ignore the evidence, we ignore the truth, we ignore the reality that is one of the ways transformation happens. When godly, loving people get religious and organize that religion for the sake not of pointing people to power and control structures, not to the sake of pointing people away from God, but pointing them to His grace and truth. When that happens, God's love takes over. And when God's love takes over, the world starts to change. 1947. Never before 1947 did an African American player play Major League Baseball. Not because they weren't good enough, but because they weren't invited to the party. It was racist. It was a deep-seated prejudice that this country has struggled with for most of our history. And in 1947, it was deep. It's still significant today, and not just in places where there's this mass of interracial integration. It happens right here in central Iowa, in rural and small-town Iowa, just in the hearts that we carry toward people of different races and ethnicities and backgrounds. Jackie Robinson, as most of you who know any kind of American history, you know he was the first person to break the barrier, to be the first African-American player. And maybe you saw the movie, or maybe you did a study on him back in grade school or something, and you know a little bit more about his story. But I'm guessing you don't know this part. He was a deeply devoted follower of Jesus Christ. And that's why he was the first African-American to play Major League Baseball. Because the guy who signed him was a deeply devoted follower of Jesus Christ. The owner of the Brooklyn Dodgers named Branch Rickey, who realized, who had a life goal to integrate baseball because of his faith, because of his religion, because of the church he grew up in that taught him, informed him, and shaped him in this way, that said all of the people God creates are equal in this sense, and they ought to have every opportunity to do anything that they want. And so he made it a part of his life mission to integrate the game that he loved, Major League Baseball, and he was such a big part of. But he knew he didn't just need a great athlete. He didn't just need somebody who was as good as Jackie Robinson would be, who went on to become a Hall of Fame baseball player simply based on his statistics. He knew he needed an exceptional baseball player. But he knew he also needed an exceptional human being who had a deep foundation of religious faith, because he knew how important it was in shaping his worldview. He knew it would take strength, and the kind of strength that only comes from the power of love. So the first time he heard about Jackie Robinson and he found out that he was a Christian, Jackie Robinson was a Sunday school teacher in the church he grew up in before he was a Major League Baseball player. I mean, he was all in. He didn't just want to receive this as a personal gift of salvation for himself. He wanted to share it with the kids in his church. That was his heart. Jackie Robinson was invited to meet with Branch Rickey when Branch Rickey found out about his faith, not just about his athletic ability and his baseball skill. When they met for, history tells us, 3 hours. In the movie 42, it was about 2 minutes, because that's what movies do. But most of the conversation was about faith and Scripture and the Word. During that meeting, Branch Rickey signed Jackie Robinson to a major league contract. But Branch Rickey, who was kind of an ornery cuss of a guy, even though he's a deeply devoted follower of Jesus Christ with love pouring out of his heart, and you can be both. Those are some of the most fun people around. Ornery cusses who love Jesus. It's awesome. Colorful. He wanted to test Jackie in that meeting and make sure that he had what Jesus preached about in the Sermon on the Mount. See if he can pick up on it. That takes strength. Turn the other cheek, Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount. That takes strength and guts. I want a player who won't fight back, because you will be abused. You will be attacked. You will be taken on. You will be threatened. And all those things happen. That season wasn't easy for Jackie Robinson, even though he played extremely well. The fans at every stadium he walked into tried to boo him off the field. He led the league in being hit by pitches, by far, because prejudiced white pitchers were trying to bean him out of baseball, aiming for his head instead of trying to strike him out. Can you imagine? Would you put up for that, or would you walk away? He needed to be deeply rooted in his religious faith. He needed a strength that goes further than what a human being can muster up by himself. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy on any level at all. His own teammates rejected him. They wouldn't let him in the locker room on all sorts of levels, except for two players, one of whom was Pee Wee Reese, the greatest player in baseball in 1947, the most famous for sure, the most loved baseball player in 1947. A shortstop, a future Hall of Famer. He's the Derek Jeter of his day, if you know baseball today but don't know your history. He was the perennial all-star, greatest shortstop in the game. And he's called Pee-wee because when he's a senior in high school, he's 120 pounds. And his high school baseball coach looked at him and said, "You can't make the team, you're 120 pounds. So Pee-wee played for his, I'm not making this up, for his church team. You see, Pee-wee's acceptance of Jackie Robinson into the locker room as the most famous player in baseball was a big move. And a courageous move, and a move he made because of his religious faith, because of good religion, because of the church that Pee-wee grew up in. Pee-wee Reese is the first person that I've ever heard of who's drafted directly from his church league baseball team to the majors. Which ought to give hope to those of you who play on the Lutheran Church of Hope softball team. You never know. Play hard, people. Cream the Catholics. Total joke. There's a joke about that in a bulletin where it said, our softball team's going to go out and kill Christ the King today. Kind of prophetic. In a poignant moment in baseball history, which led to a poignant moment in American history, Pee-wee Reese embraced Jackie Robinson publicly on the field. And they held that embrace until the fans in Cincinnati stopped booing Jackie Robinson for being on their field for the first time. He refused to let go. The movie version's a little more subtle. The actual history is Pee-wee held the embrace until everyone stopped booing. He's Pee-wee Reese, the only one who could get away with that. The most revered player in baseball. And it started to change everything. All religion can be a very positive influence when people live out the radical love of Jesus Christ, not just when they're in church on Sunday morning, but when they're out there in the fields of daily life. Take a look and we'll go home. Radical love taught to Pee-wee Reese by his religious Christian upbringing, and he lived it out in his daily life. I want my family and the fans to know who I am, Pee-wee says to Jackie. I want the world to know who I am. Not just because they see me get in the car and drive to church on Sunday morning, but they see the radical love that fills me up and overflows out of me. Does the world know who you are? Do they know who you are by the way you live your life? Do they see the love of Jesus pouring out of you? See, love isn't so easy, is it? It's challenging, too. But this is the love that God calls us to. This is the life He created us for. This is when religion gets good. Is when we carry out Jesus' command to love. If we say we love, if we say we have God but we don't love, 1 John 4 says, we are liars. Because God is, what is God, church? God is, love. Say it again, God is, love. Say it again, God is, love. Live it out. That's good religion. Amen?